Hello there, you are listening to the second episode of the Ultimate Mums Club podcast. In this episode, I am talking to a very good friend of mine, Sally Mann, who will be telling us more about her journey as a mum so far and how she juggles running her own business alongside being mum. It is so lovely to have you here. It means that you have grabbed a snippet of time for you, and that is brilliant. Here at the Ultimate Mums Club podcast, I hope to provide you with a supportive and informative listen. We will be hearing from many different mums, listening to their stories, as well as speaking to experts offering their guidance in those more challenging times. I will also be sharing my journey as a mum and how I juggle being mum alongside running my own business and finding some kind of time to myself. Let's get cracking. So welcome, Sally, to my second episode of the Ultimate Mums Club podcast. So for those of you that don't know, Sally is a very dear friend of mine and we've known each other for many years. We actually used to live together, didn't we?
Yeah, like a lifetime ago. Yeah.
Freedom and lots of hangovers. So I thought it would be a really good way to start by starting right at the beginning with you. So if you wouldn't mind sharing just a little bit about your journey as a mum so far and perhaps starting with your birth story and how that was for you. I briefly spoke about mine in the first episode, so over to you, Sally.
Thanks, Luz. Okay, so I'm a mum of two boys and I had two very different birth stories with both of them, but I'm actually hoping that's going to work well for you guys because I think it's always interesting to see that, you know, just because you have one birth one way doesn't mean you're going to have two identical births. So I'm hoping that I can bring some sort of positivity to, you know, the fear of childbirth with my stories. So now my boys are 7 and 5, so it does feel like a long time ago. I didn't enjoy being pregnant and I was always really envious of the mums who did, because it feels like something as a woman that I should have enjoyed more. But I had SPD, so that's like wobbly pelvis. It's really painful. And actually, once you've had it once, it's something like 80% chance of getting it again in each pregnancy and more severely. So I had it in my first and then I got it again in my second. So I didn't enjoy being pregnant. It wasn't something I found easy. When it came to the birth of Dexter, my oldest son, I did what I think lots of first-time mums do, and that's exactly what I was told by hospital staff. And actually now in hindsight as a mum, I wish I'd listened to myself more and just waited and trusted my body. So my son was measuring, they predicted he'd be about 12 pounds. Now if you've never given birth before, when a midwife that you trust completely because you've never done this before, or it might have been a consultant, I can't remember now, says you're going to birth an enormous baby, you will do anything not to give birth naturally. I still went in it hoping to have a natural birth and believed I could do it. But they said, look, if we get to 39 weeks and he's not been born, let's just do an induction and get him out a bit earlier because, you know, he's going to be so enormous. So I said, of course, I'm just going to do whatever you want me to do because you know what you're talking about and I've never done this before. And yes, please, yes, just get him out. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wish that I had just let him come when he was ready, because the problem with being induced is that your body is then subjected to unnatural hormones. It took 2 days of labour, 2 days of labour for him. And then they ended up giving me a C-section anyway, because he reacted really badly to the synthetic hormones they were giving him. And, you know, his heart rate was racing and then dropping and racing and dropping. And it got to the point where they said, look, for your safety, his safety, we're going to have to do a C-section. So, yeah, after 2 days of being in labour, he was born by C-section anyway, which is fine. But just to really make this a great birth story, during the labour, they found that I had a hernia. And so I had to stay in surgery for a few more hours. So he was born, given to daddy, whisked off, and he got a nice couple of hours with daddy, and I stayed in surgery and ended up losing a lot of blood. And all was fine though. So happy, everyone's happy. Baby's been born, he's healthy, been handed over to dad. I've been stitched back up and wheeled round to him, and I get to meet my baby for the first time. And you know, people build it up like it's going to be this magical moment. I blame Hollywood for this, where you instantly feel bonded with your baby. And the midwife handed me my baby to feed him, like popped him on my boob. Thanks very much. And I went, oh, well, here he is on my boob. And he walked off and left me. And I was looking down at this baby, and Rob's on the phone to his mum saying, oh, we've had a boy, and all the exciting news. And I looked down at him and I was like, I think he's blue. Should he be blue? Like, this isn't blue. And the midwife looked over at me and said, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine, but I don't think he is. And I still can't move my body because I've had an anaesthetic, so I can only move my arms. So but I'm looking at him and he's this floppy, lifeless blue thing. And she runs and she pushes this button. An alarm fills the hospital. Someone from some distant corridor shouts, mother or baby? And someone shouts back, baby. And then before this child that I'd had for, I would say, 60 seconds is then whipped out of my arms and taken away again. With this Rob on the phone to his mum going, mum, I've got to go. And just sort of hung up. And we're both just have no idea what just happened and if our baby's okay. And the worst thing for me as a mum is that I knew that he'd been with daddy fine for 2 hours and I'd had him for a minute.
Yeah.
And he stopped breathing. And I think it's terrifying and also really hard not to go, I did that. Like, there's something that I did wrong that broke that baby.
Yeah, so the start of a mental battle kind of thing. Am I doing the right thing? Started right there.
Yeah, and it was almost the trigger that led to what was postnatal depression, although I never knew that's what I had when I had it. So he was whisked off and I heard a cry, which I can't be sure was him even now, but I think in my head I was saying, it's him, he's fine, he's fine. But yeah, he ended up, I mean, he was a big baby, he was 9 pounds 3, so he wasn't the 12 pounds they promised.
Not 12 pounds, yes.
he got whisked off to the intensive care unit at Broomfield Hospital and he stayed there for 5 days. And they never found out why he stopped breathing. They have no idea. Now they did all these tests on him. And I've just decided that he liked a bit of attention and he just wanted people to look at him for a while.
Is that how he's gone on from being
yeah,
a baby?
That's it.
I just want attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I got lots of cuddles from all the intensive care nurses. And but what it did, even though he was healthy and fine, he was this enormous 9 pound baby in the incubator next to these 2 or 3 pound babies in incubators. So he looked ridiculous. But what it actually did was take him away from me for the first 5 days of his life. And I think that had a tremendous effect on our relationship. And this, I find it really hard to say this out loud even now, but if someone had said to me within those first 3 months of his life, I'll take him back, this isn't for you, I would have given him back. That is how low I was in those first 3 months.
Yeah.
And I think it's got to do with how he was born.
Yeah.
And I get a bit teary just thinking about it now, but yeah, it was a real difficult few months for us. And it wasn't till after I got through those 3 months that I even spoke to Rob about it and said, I didn't want him and I didn't bond with him and it was awful for me.
Because yeah. Everyone experiences baby blues, us women, we all experience baby blues, but to experience a traumatic birth like that, or, you know, welcome into the world and then,
yeah,
you know, to not know whether you're doing the right thing, to, you know, naturally feel like it was your fault, even though it wasn't,
that is
going to trigger the postnatal depression most definitely. All those emotions. And did you find that, you know, did you look for support at all, or were you totally unaware it was just part of the ride for you?
Totally unaware, which is, it's weird because I now listen to other women and other mums who talk about their postnatal depression and how they felt during it, but I knew I didn't want him and I knew that there was no bond immediately with him. But I didn't link that to postnatal depression, which sounds bizarre now. But I just didn't in my head make the connection. I just felt, oh, this isn't for me. Like, this hasn't worked. Take him back. Me and Rob were fine before. Like, it was it was like a complete disconnection for me between the label of postnatal depression and my relationship with my son. It was looking back. Fortunately, it wasn't forever. Unfortunately, I learned quite quickly and bonded with him. I would say he must have been at 4 months old or something, probably when I started to think, actually, this is for me and I do love him. And I was just having a really tough time in the beginning. And we just start and we thought he was going to die. And, you know, it was just hard to bond with my baby when Rob got to see him all the time. And I was really poorly after my surgery. I couldn't walk to him. They didn't wheel me around. Occasionally someone would bring him to see me, but I was still like, oh, you know, it was a tricky start for us. But
yeah,
you know.
And did you say you were in hospital for 5 days after he was born?
Yeah. So I was in hospital 5 days. It was probably after 3 days that I could get out of my bed and be wheeled around to see him. And they discharged me, but they didn't make me leave because he was still there. So I got to stay anyway. But he was over on the intensive care unit and I was in the postnatal labour ward. So we weren't together until I think it had been 5 days he was in there before he was brought back to me. So, yeah, it was a long time.
It's funny because we've been friends for a long time. And now you're talking to me about it, I'm remembering myself. Because it was quite a while before you guys announced Dexter's here, you know, because of
recovery. I think literally Rob had been on the phone to his mum, so she was the only one who knew when he stopped breathing. So then there was this big, you know, sudden emergency to us. Well, it was an emergency in real life as well. So the whole big announcement and letting people know you've having a baby wasn't really a big fun announcement for us anymore. It was a, you know, we've had a baby, but he's on an incubator, you know, the other side of the hospital.
And you do sort of slip into a parallel universe as well, don't you? I think.
Absolutely. Those first few months of his life are a blur.
I find the first year of Seb's life a blur. I don't remember anything that happened. But I remember us sort of not speaking to anyone, calling anyone apart from close family. And friends sort of, you know, is everything okay? You know, you've been in hospital for a while, so... Must have been a really worrying time for everybody that wasn't aware.
And I think you as the mum as well, time sort of blurs, so you don't realize how long you've been away from friends and family, whereas your friends and family who are outside of the blur are aware that they haven't seen you for a while, whereas you're just you know, in a bubble of emotion and crying babies and nappies and breastfeeding and stress, and you don't realize a week's been passed since you've seen anyone. And whereas your mum does realize, and your brother and your sister friends do realize that you've been absent from their lives for a few days.
Kind of a bit preoccupied, shall we say.
Yes. and completely understandable.
Going on. So you've got two children, so what was Xander's birth like? Was it any different? Was it the same?
It was very different. I went back to work full-time after having Dexter. I was a teacher, and in hindsight, that was a big mistake. I wish I hadn't done that, but I was worried about money and, you know, things like that. So I did. If I could go back, I wouldn't have done that. And it was too much for me. I felt like I was failing as a mum and failing as a teacher. I wasn't good at either. And that's not a good way to feel. And I ended up with a boss that didn't really understand me and family life. And that's when we said, you know, let's have another baby. You can go on maternity leave. You can, you know, we're going to have another one anyway. It might as well be now.
Yeah.
And we ended up having a miscarriage between the two, which was difficult. But then Xander was conceived right after the miscarriage. I think you're super fertile. I think it was sad sex. You know, we've had lost a baby. I don't know exactly when he was conceived. Poor boy. But yeah, there's about 2.5 years between the boys, all in all. And I was so determined when I had that pregnancy to not have the same experience that I'd had before. And I think that inner strength is what changed everything for me. I used a very good friend of yours, Lucy, actually, Emily Mills, who owns Babies in Waiting. I went to her when I was about 20 weeks pregnant and told her all about the experience I had with Dexter, my stress at work. And she took me under her wing. We did the hypnobirthing course with Babies in Waiting with Emily and Joe. And it took my mindset from this is all going to be awful. I'm probably going to lose a baby. You know, he's going to stop breathing. I'm going to have a C-section. I've got a toddler and have a C-section. All the fears I had to actually know you're in charge of your body.
Yeah.
You have to have a C-section. you can have the birth you want to have and it can go how you want it to go. And it wasn't easy to change my mindset from the experience I'd had to this new experience. But Emily and Joe are fantastic at their job and they give you techniques that actually you can work on to make that shift. And I had to fight with consultants who, you know, said, you've already had one C-section, you might as well have another one, and it's going to be another big baby, and all these pressures, and no, you can't have a home birth. No, yeah. You can, you know, you can't do that. But yeah, they gave me, I guess, just the strength to say, actually, unless there's a medical reason not to, I'm going to have the baby naturally, and I don't care that I've already had a C-section.
Yeah.
And it wasn't completely plain sailing, but we only had a bit of gas and air, and 12 hours later, baby number two was born, and he was born naturally, and a couple of stitches and home we were. Oh, and it was comparatively a completely different birth, and that is wholly down to my power as mum. I had no power with birth one. I just tell me what to do, and birth two I was in control of what I wanted to happen, and you know, it was fine. And I now, having had a C-section and a vaginal birth, I would choose the vaginal birth every time.
Yeah,
moving.
That's really interesting. Yeah. That is really interesting, because
one of each.
And do you think that because you were a mum to one already, it was your willpower and sheer determination that pulled you through alone, because you'd already had that experience and you almost looking out for Dex to feel like, I won't let this happen again? And
I think it was, I was just so determined not to go through that again.
Yeah.
I just knew I wouldn't be able to do that twice, and it was so hard that I did it for Xander and for me and for Rob and for the toddler that will be at home for me. Lots to fight for.
I don't know if you agree, but I find that my willpower, my determination, my mindset is completely different now that I've had a child. So I've
always, amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's so amazing. And I don't know if it's like a survival thing or what you're looking after.
I think that as mums, we're not as selfish as we are before. Not that we're bad people before we have kids, but once you've got children, your focus shifts away from you to someone else, and that changes your whole view on the world.
Yeah,
so I think you see everything differently because you start to think about other people, not just the way it affects you.
Yeah.
Being a mum has changed everything for me. I wish I could go back to my 20-something Sally and say, be a bit more this and be a bit more that. But I guess it's your experience that makes you, so you can't do that.
No. Always go forwards, never go backwards.
That's it, yeah.
So looking at the present day Sally, what does that look like for you at the moment? You run your own business, don't you? And you've got two boys, 5 and 7, as you said. So, you know, explain a bit about your business and how you fit that in with being a mum, and because they're both at school now, aren't they?
They are, yeah. Well, we say at school, they're currently at home, but homeschooling. They're school age. They've two boys, 5 and 7 at the moment. Dex is in year 3 and Xander started school in September. And the poor boy had a delayed start. He didn't start till October, and then he's ended up being at home anyway for the last 3 months. It's fine. I run a business. I have phonics classes, phonics with Robot Reg, and ordinarily my classes would be during school hours. The kids are at school, I go and deliver phonics classes, preschool classes to children age 1 to 4, and it fits in perfectly with my life. It's got all the good things about teaching that I love, but in my own business. And when I first started the business, I was terrified because I'd never done anything like this before, but I knew that to be there for my boys and to make my life more flexible, I had to make a change. So doing phonics classes is the perfect balance between something I love, but being able to work flexibly around my family. So yeah, it was great. How do we make it work? I guess Lucy said this about me, that she thinks I'm really organized. And she knows me well. I organize myself very well to the point it's probably a problem, but I make plans, not just for me and the business, but the boys too. So I like to have goals and plan what I'm going to do for my business. And sometimes they're just small things, but mentally I feel like I'm always moving forward. So when it comes to juggling motherhood and running my own business, I think planning is key, because once you throw the plan out the window, everything feels a bit like you're juggling, and then you'll feel like you're dropping the balls. And if you feel like you're not keeping up, you're going to then drop all the balls and everything will fall apart. So if you have a, even if it's not a set in stone plan, if you kind of have an idea of what you're doing for your business and your family and try and work towards those goals, you're going to feel like you're moving forward and you won't feel like you're dropping them all the time. Does that make sense?
I love that. Yeah. It's something that I've newly discovered, getting up early and creating a plan for the week.
Lucy, you're so good. Well, I don't get up early, but I do plan.
I don't get up early every day, Sally. Not every day. There are snooze days.
Do you know why I don't do it though, Luce? Because I wouldn't be able to get up early and get past my children to get anything done. They would hear that one floorboard and then everyone would be up at five. And then it just, if I thought I could sneak past them, then I would go for it. But there is not a chance of me getting up without them getting up too. So,
yeah, I do think
early in the morning.
Seb is like that as well now. I'm not getting away with it.
Is
as
it?
Much as I used to. Yeah. Mummy, daddy.
Oh, no.
It's usually daddy, actually.
Oh, no. Brilliant.
So for anyone that doesn't know, what is phonics? You know, how can it help the development of a child? You know, what?
I'd love to talk about it. Sell my business. So phonics is essentially the more modern way of teaching children to read, and that when I say modern, that doesn't mean it hasn't existed in the past, it just means it's the current way of teaching children and it's going to stay. It's essentially teaching children to read by breaking words down into sounds. So when we were children, Lucy, the teachers would have taught us to look at a word, learn what it says, and then you've learnt the word. Whereas now teachers teach children each letter and the sound it makes. And then that gives children the skills to be able to read any word, because they understand how to break it down. Whereas, you know, before you'd have to learn every word to be able to read it. Whereas now we're giving them those skills to be able to do it independently. And that's way more important and more beneficial to the children than the old way of teaching children to read. So my business is essentially, four different age groups. We have the minis class, which is 1 and 2 year olds, and that's teaching pre-phonics. So all those skills like listening to instruments, role play, speech and language development, comprehension of language, so understanding the words that they're hearing. That's for the very little toddlers. Then our preschool age children, we teach them all about letter sounds and how to recognize them, how to make them and how to hear them. But it's all done through playing games and activities, high energy, fun, short. No one's asking your 2-year-old to sit down at a desk with a worksheet and a pen for 45 minutes. We play quick, fun activities so they don't really realize they're learning. And then really popular this year because of lockdown, we've got reception and year 1 classes as well, where we're actually reading with the children and helping them with their phonics journey. Yeah, so yeah. And the best classes ever. Love them so much. Like, I really love my job. I feel very lucky.
It is such a fun job. I do wish I could do something like that, but I would be hopeless because I wouldn't remember the lesson plan. I'd be terrible. Like if I was an aerobics instructor or something like that, I would just be terrible. It'd be a mess.
You'd end up stopping halfway through and going, hold on, just got to check my notes.
That would be me.
Seb loves them though. I've got some of my best videos ever from Seb dancing in our phonics classes.
Absolutely loves them.
I've got Reg Superstar.
I think he started the
he was in a babies class.
Yeah, when you just launched the minis class, I'm sure, because they hadn't been going long, had they?
No.
3 now. Or 3 and a half, I should say.
He's been coming since he was a baby, few months old.
And it really has helped his development. I really believe that, because he is shockingly intelligent for his age, I feel. I know every mum says, oh, my boy's really clever, my little girl's really clever. But he scares me sometimes, and I do think we have you to thank for that. Thank you.
Oh, stop, it's him, it's all him, he's a very clever boy.
Yeah, it's scary, I'm scared. No, I'm only joking. So for the boys to see you working really hard, that must be great as well for you, creating a great work ethic for them, seeing mum work hard and, you know, looking after them at the same time. Does that make you feel really proud of what you do as well?
I hope so. It's hard because when I went into this, I really wanted to be able to be there, take them to school, pick them up from school. So on the outside, to them, it might look like mummy doesn't have a job because mummy gets to take me to school, mummy can come to my assembly, mummy can watch my Christmas play, mummy picks me up from school. And that's everything I wanted from my business. But at the same time, I do see the mummy that has to work really hard and know, darling, give me mummy 10 minutes, I've got to speak to this person, or, you know, I've got to do this. So they do see that actually I work really hard, but they also, I don't know if they appreciate it, but they also know I'm there for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it certainly makes me proud, and I'm proud that I took the leap because it was something I could have easily shied away from. So hope it makes them proud. They might be too young to quite understand, but hopefully they'll growing up seeing that, you know, women are business women, and you know, we can work hard and do well for ourselves. I hope that they see that.
It's so difficult to get that balance, isn't it? Because sometimes
absolutely
and think sometimes I feel like I'm on my phone too much or on the computer too much. I'm just going to do this email, and I'm just gonna, and I am very conscious of that. It's really difficult, I would say, to get that balance. So do you find it hard to balance that enough so that you're not getting angry with yourself and angry with them? Or is it something you're, again, very organised at?
Yeah, I mean, I still have moments where I have mummy guilt when I say to them, no, mummy's got to do this. And that does happen regularly. But something we started, it must be, I mean, it was pre-lockdown, so it must be a while ago now, was an hour after school where I turn my phone off. So they get a dedicated hour, which doesn't sound a lot, but actually they're at school all day, so there's nothing I can do about that time anyway. So between 3:30 and 4:30, they have got my full attention. And it's not me social mediaing what we're doing together. It's not me taking pictures of what we're doing together. It is mummy's phone's off. And they say to me, put your phone down, mummy, it's family time. And we do something together for that hour, Monday to Friday. And it doesn't always work. Sometimes I've got a club to do or, you know, whatever they've got to do. But, you know, it's an hour and then they go off independently and play and I do dinner and things like that. So I try as much as I can to give them an hour where they get my actual attention. And then the rest of the week, when I am fitting in a call here or an email there, or, you know, I've got to adapt this plan or drop some resources off and they've got to come in the car with me to drive around to Paula's house or Karen's house and drop off, you know, more robot Reggie's or whatever it may be, I feel less guilty of that because I know I've given them actual focus time. They've got mummy's attention. So yeah, I do try to, it's not always possible, but I do try to give them time where they've got me and only me and not me and my phone.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I do try and do that when Seb comes back from the childminders actually. But it is, it is really difficult to do sometimes, I've got to be honest. And that's not because I don't want to spend time with Seb. It's just because I think, well, I'm kind of doing this for Seb and I'm trying to get things done so that then I can relax at the weekend or on Sunday or whatever it may be. So it is difficult. I think it's
perfectly normal and natural to feel that way, because that's exactly how I feel. And just finding that time where, you know, there's no compromise, this is his time. And then you can compromise in other times of the week, but this is my time with Seb. This is my 30 minutes between whatever and whatever. I've picked him up from childminder, this is our time. And just giving that to him, and then you'll feel less guilt for the rest of the week, I think.
So I'd like to, or I'm going to, I should say, because this is only my second episode, end the podcast with some tips from my interviewees. So have you got three tips for any of the mums listening today that have helped you on your journey, Sally, that you'd like to share that you think would be really helpful?
I do. I hope they're helpful. I thought long and hard about these. So my first one is about listening to your child. When your child talks to you, particularly like when they're Seb's age or younger, sometimes it's really easy for us to go, yeah, or just carry on what we're doing and not really listen. But I've learned over the years, if you don't listen now, they're going to stop talking to you. And one day when they're teenagers and they've got a real problem, they're not going to tell you. So my first and probably biggest of three top tips is when your child talks, even if it's to tell you that they saw a brown cat climb a tree 5 years ago, or whatever they want to say that doesn't make any sense, you get down to their level, you nod and smile and tell your child you're listening, because one day they will want to tell you something you really need to hear and you want to be the one they come to. So making them know that you're there and listening from age one is so important. So no matter what they're saying, as irrelevant as you think it is, listen to your child and make sure they know.
To me so often, but I've never thought of it like that. That's such a good point.
I think it's so key, which is why I put it as number one, because they're going to be teenagers one day and something bad's going to happen and the person they're going to come to should be you. But if they have got this ingrained belief that mummy doesn't really listen, but they won't realise they've got it, but because they've had it from since a toddler, mummy's too busy to listen, mummy doesn't really listen, they're just not going to tell you. So I think just listen to your child. It's going to take 30 seconds out of your day. Get down, bend down. Yes, darling. Oh my goodness, you saw a cat. That's so exciting. And then you can go back to doing whatever you were doing. But just show them you're listening. Them you're listening from a young age, because they will want you to listen when they're older.
Definitely. Ooh, I like that tip.
Do you want number two?
Yeah, go for number two. What's your second
Okay, so tip? My second top tip is about following through with your, well, I don't want to call them threats, but they are really. I think we sometimes, as parents, make threats that we can't follow through with. For example, stop being naughty or I'm going to take away all your toys. It's so easy to say that, but actually, in reality, will you take away all your children's toys? No, you won't. So don't make a threat.
It would take me too long. I couldn't take away all the toys.
Exactly. Or the whole, I'm going to tell Santa to burn your toys. And like, you would never actually do that. So I think if we're going to say things to our children, we should be able to follow through. And the example I always think of is like, if you're walking down a busy road and they won't hold your hand, so you have to hold my hand, it's not safe. If you don't hold mummy's hand, I'm going to take you home. And then if they don't hold your hand, take them home, like actually follow through with it. And if you do that really early on, they're going to believe that what mummy says will happen, or daddy, or nanny, whoever's doing it. Whereas if you make empty threats where I'm going to burn all your toys or whatever you may say, they're never going to believe that you're going to do it. So you don't have that authority anymore and they don't really believe what you're going to say. So my second top tip is to only make threats that you can follow through with, and follow through if they don't do as they're told.
I had to do this only yesterday. Because we did
a bit of follow through.
Because we were in the park. And I don't know why, I don't know where he got this from, but Sebby decided to spit on the slide, but he just slid down. And I turned around to him and said, that is disgusting. Don't you dare do that. Come down the slide now, we're going home. And eventually he came down the slide because I couldn't go up and retrieve him because I had the dog with me. And this woman was watching me and I thought, clean the slide. I was like, sorry. Ran off. So, right, Sebby, do you know why we're leaving the park? He went, yes, because I spat on the slide. I said, well, don't do that. It's disgusting. Don't ever do that again.
The thing is, he won't do it again because you took him home. Whereas if you'd gone, Seb, don't spit on the slide because, you know, I'm going to take you home, and then you let him go on the swings, he won't realise he's thinking it, but he's going to be thinking, she doesn't really mean it when she says she's going to take me home so I can do whatever I want. Yep. So, parenting, Lucy, I love it.
Don't create a rod for your own back. That's what I say.
I know. And the thing is, sometimes you really don't want to go home. You might be at a barbecue with your best friend and all of her kids. You know, I really don't want to go home. But I've said, if you smack, you know, Stanley again, I'm going home. And then he smacks Stanley again, you've got to go home. Even though it's going to pain you to leave your best friend's barbecue. Take them home.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go home.
I know.
And top tip number three.
My number three top tip is to boost your child's self-esteem wherever you can. I read something that was years ago and I can't even remember where I read it. And it was this thing about when you pay your child a compliment, go up to them, say it to them and touch them, like on their shoulder or rub their back or anything, just a positive touch. And that makes that compliment more powerful to them. I've been trying to do it ever since. So, you know, Sam, I go up to him and say, Dex, that was really kind there. You really helped Xander. But I make sure that I go to him, down to his level and just rub his back or something, as I say it. And it's about the touching with the words that makes it more of an affirmation, so it sticks with them than just, you know, shouting, "Oh, that was nice, well done." You know, it's just something about boosting their self-esteem is more powerful if it comes with a touch.
So
top tip number three about empowering your kids with self-confidence.
I think that's a really good idea, because as an adult, if you think about it, when someone shouts across the room, like you said, to you, "Oh, well done you," you know, "well done," you know, it's very impersonal, isn't it? It's not rejected by any means, you know, and it's still a nice thing for someone to do, but it's just so much more personal when someone comes up to you, and you appreciate it more when they sort of
and the more we can do that when they're little, the more brilliant they're going to feel about themselves as they grow up. And what you want then a child who has self-belief, you know, they believe they can do anything, and that's going to come from us to start with. You know, if we believe in them and we praise them for the good things they do, they're going to grow up believing they can, you know, take on the world.
That's what makes parenting such a tough job. We don't get paid enough.
You get paid.
So thank you so much for being my first ever guest on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I've been so excited.
It's been really good. And if anyone is interested in Robot Reg and his lovely phonics groups, can people find you online? You've got a Facebook page, haven't you? Website, if they live local.
Yeah, so my classes are in Billericay, Whitford, Basildon and Thurrock. So if you're on Facebook, you can find Phonics with Robot Reg and then search for Billericay and we will come up. You can find me on Instagram as well, Sally_RobotReg, or you can go on robotreg.co.uk and search for Billericay again and you will find me.
I can pop the details in the show notes for you, Sally, as well.
Thank you.
And you often pop up in the Mum's Alphabet of Life as well, don't you? And I forgot to mention, shame on me, that you are actually one of the partners in the Ultimate Mums Club Hub, aren't you?
Oh my God, it's been amazing. It's been running for like a week or 2 weeks and it's the best club ever. It's so good, Lucy. It's so good. So many amazing people on there. So yeah, if you're not on there, guys.
You get to enjoy the content as well, don't you? So
I know. I feel like I'm getting a free ride, but I do. It's worth every penny. It's,
she does work too. She does work too. Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been lovely.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and I will see you soon, hopefully.
See you soon. Bye.
So that's it for this episode of the Ultimate Mums Club podcast. It would mean the world to me if you would subscribe and rate the show on iTunes or Podbean. I hope that it has helped contribute towards your recharging your batteries and doing something for you. Did you know that the Ultimate Mums Club has its very own Facebook membership group? The exclusive membership is only £5 a month and will present you with activities for mum as well as activities for your children to keep them occupied and learning. This will help you in your health, fitness, mental health, well-being and self-care. All the details of how you can join will be in the show notes below. It is so important to look after you, so make sure that you do. Bye for now and see you next time at the Ultimate Mums Club podcast.